This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
I count it a special privilege and blessing, as Jim would say, to sit with a bunch of gray hairs. Yeah?
Yes.
And to reflect a bit on what really does it take to keep a ministry, a viable ministry, standing the test of time, standing the test of many winds. And I believe in our group here has represented a lot of experience in those sorts of things as to really what's happening, what does it take, and what are those things that seem to either take it up or take it down? It's really easy to feel the things that take it down, right? You just have an intuitive sense, this is not good, right? You just know that's the case. So many times it's a little more challenging to get it off that slide, right? That's oftentimes a little more difficult to get it to where you really want it to be. Sometimes you may find it almost impossible. It seems, humanly speaking, impossible to get it off of that slide. But we just like to sit together today, and I'm so excited to have you all here in this group. I think that we can share and learn together, and I value your input on my humble thoughts up here. The thing that I'm so keenly aware of today is that this is about people, maybe almost more than ministries. And it so makes a difference as to what is going on with the people within our ministries, as to really whether it's a healthy, thriving ministry, or whether it's the other kind. And so I'm hoping that we can just share freely together today and just learn together a bit and just reflect a little, and because each of us is on a different place, I'm sure. Each of your ministries that you represent here tonight, this afternoon, is at a different spot. There's probably similarities, but at a little different place. And so, obviously, a few of the comments that are made here might say, well, that's not really us. Then others might say, yep, that is us. So I think that's what this is about. So let's just think about this together a little bit. It seems to me, in just its very simplest form, that our Anabaptist ministries need four obvious things to thrive, no matter what it is. We need to have, a vision, a clear vision. So what are we doing here? Maybe you could just tell me. So if you would say in a word, what is the vision for what you're involved with? Could we just do that? Just not that many of us here. Let's just go around the circle and do that. Could we? Just in a word or two. What are you about? Planting churches. All right. Helping men find freedom. Discipling. All right. Yeah.
Evangelism. Ministry from books.
Yes.
Funding.
Yeah.
Creating exposure to people. Are you care about?
Yes. 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 You guys in the back there?
I'm curved but not involved in this.
All right.
Interested.
Yes, yes.
So, introducing urban youth?
Yeah, yeah. So I hope that you can keep some of those words clearly in your mind as we think about this, because it's all about that. Okay? So what is it? It's about helping troubled people. It's about discipling. It's about education. That's the main thing. In the context, of course, and I'm sure that we all understand, it's an understood thing, we're doing it in this context of Jesus Christ, okay? it's all about Him. Whatever we're doing, I trust it's all about Him. And I'm kind of taking that as understood here as we do this, okay? It's about Jesus Christ first and primary. But as we think about how we can honor Him, we're doing it through these different avenues that we're talking about. Well, obviously you need a clear vision. You need qualified personnel with the same vision. I just emphasize that because it doesn't always happen. You might say, well, that's an automatic. No, it's not automatic. You need funds to carry out that vision. You need a constituency to embrace. You need the constituency embrace. And I was trying to think what kind of a word to put on this one, and that's just kind of two words that came together for me. You need a supporting base behind you that not just, I'm a bit of an idealist, so probably some of the things you hear up here today will be a bit idealistic, okay? If you want to call me on it, I don't mind, okay? But I think we don't just need a constituency that tolerates your ministry, if possible. You want a constituency to embrace whatever it is you're doing. It will. I think it'll be the difference between maybe an old-time 8N tractor versus power steering, okay? My dad grew up in the old days, obviously, and we used to drive these little in Virginia, okay? Not now, other places they had big tractors, but we had these little ones, okay? That we kind of, now Jim, that's not a negative against Virginia, okay? over in the valley, you had the big tractors. We were over in the sticks on the other side of the hill, and we had these little tractors, and you just had to kind of manhandle them, you know what I mean? And sometimes I think our ministries can feel like that, like you're really having to drive this thing. But if you have a constituency embrace, you sense the, yeah, we're with you. We're in this. We support it. We will help you. We'll make it happen. To me, that is something you want to strive for, and I hope we can talk about that a little bit more here as we go through this. What kind of things really can help us with this? So, just a few questions, and I'm basically following the several questions that were listed in your handouts and that were listed in the brochure. What are the factors that really allow a ministry to continue making a contribution to its constituency over the long haul? And we're kind of using those kind of words, sustainable. Interestingly enough, there's been several conversations going on in this conference about this subject, and I was comparing notes a bit with Richie, who was having a little similar lesson, and it was interesting how each of us comes at it from just a little bit of a different angle and a little different perspective, and yet all parts of the whole. So I'm sure that if you would have just come to this conference and taken every class on this matter, you would have probably gotten an amazing balance of this subject. So what are the factors that allow a ministry to continue making a contribution? I am offering a couple of things here, and I would value your thoughts on these things. I come from a perspective of working at one of our VS units, a healthcare ministry, Mountain View Nursing Home in Virginia. And we draw our staff from a gazillion of different churches and constituencies of just about every kind that's represented here in this conference. Many, many different church groups and affiliations. The thing that has always been a challenge for us at Mountain View is to somehow try to be sensitive to all of them as much as you can. Can you keep all of the supporting groups 100% satisfied all the time? At least you're smiling. The simple answer we all know. Not too likely. There's just too many opinions. There's too many people that will scrutinize you up and down, give you the once over, the twice over, the thrice over, still ain't happy. What do you do with those situations? So how can we be assured of where our supporting churches are at this point in history? And I emphasize this point. Remember, we're talking about sustainable ministry structure. Sustainable. It's got the idea of we're not just in this for today. And I know many times we find our ministries operating too much in crisis mode. If I could just make it through today, have you ever been there? If I can make it through today, then we'll do tomorrow. Well, even Jesus has something to say about the idea of, you know, live today. At the same time, I think it behooves us to be a little thoughtful about the changing scene. Because, do you agree with me? It's changing, yeah? It's a changing scene. It is a changing scene. So I think we need an awareness of where our supporting churches are at this moment in history. Maybe you have a couple of thoughts. What kind of feelers do you have out there that you feel like you know where you are in this matter? Any quick comments on this? How do you know when you're on target or not on target? I think that there are a few things that might help us think through this a bit. One is, it's not a static situation. If you're a viable, sustainable ministry, you cannot just say, as it's always been, so it always will be. Now, I'm probably a bit more keenly aware of that than some of you might be, because I'm in the healthcare field. If any of you followed at all about what's going on in healthcare these days, you understand. It's a moving target. You sit still, you're going to get run over. Okay? But I believe this is true in a lot of ways as well in our church ministries of any kind. It's not a static situation. Our churches have a tendency to really, our churches have not been known to always maintain a singular focus. It's not just taking a status quo position. I don't think it's a head in the sand approach. And I don't think it's, and you know, sometimes we feel like this, just get a life, you know, when somebody's got an issue with something. No, we can't really afford to do that, because there is, I think, in so many ways, a changing vision and a changing focus. And I think it so requires a commitment to relevancy. Daniel and I were just talking about it in the beginning here this evening about our experiences in Belize, Central America, and the mission field there. And back in the about 1980, my wife Lois and I, just newly married, landed up at Scotland Half Moon back in the bush of Belize, and we were called there to do a new church plant in that village. And we got there, and they had this house up on stilts, a part of a house. It didn't have a bathroom in it. It didn't have a kitchen in it. There wasn't even an outhouse on the place when we got there. It was a swamp. So as a newly married couple, I had my work cut out for me from the get-go. Hit the water running and broke ground for an outhouse and got this place working, okay? And we put our heart and soul into it. For 4 years we were there. And the Lord blessed, and a church was planted, a church was started. Today, that house we lived in is now has been sold to a Christian couple from the village, and the mission no longer needs to have a couple stationed in that village. It's the changing scene. It's a commitment to relevancy. It's not a static situation. It's changing. We flow with it. Do I have a bit of nostalgia about the place where we used to live? Yes, of course. But it's wonderful that it can progress and keep moving and keep going. It's not needing to stay the same. It shouldn't stay the same. To be relevant, it needs to change. It needs to be current. You need to learn, you need to grow with the circumstances. It requires a commitment to relevancy. Well, here's a question. How do we gauge what our churches want and expect of us? Could you help me out on this one a little bit? In your ministry, how do you gauge it? Is this just an intuitive sense we're talking about? How do you know if you're on target or not? Any comments?
Answer that.
Thank you, Dan. You're being very, very perceptive and intuitive in this matter. You know, it's interesting because at Mountain View, this has been a long debated question. So is Mountain View, what are the stakeholders? Is Mountain View about serving the young people that come there to work in the voluntary service unit? Or is Mountain View about caring for the residents? Or is Mountain View in some way trying to satisfy all those churches I was talking about behind us? And more specifically, the Oak Grove Mennonite Church, which owns and operates Mountain View. Dan, I wish I could tell you that the answer at Mountain View is a bit clearer than what I think it is. The way I personally think about it is it's a debate that goes in endless circles, because if you had no residents, there would be no staff. If you have no staff, there would be no residents. So which is the most important? Which of this is this train that's driving? What's driving the train? Maybe a little bit like a goose. Is it the goose that lays the golden eggs, or is it the golden eggs? Which part of this thing are we taking the best care of? And at Mountain View, I've always said that the better you take care of your staff, the better they will take care of the residents. They're inseparable. In my opinion, they're inseparable. But I would certainly agree that these questions are so significant in comparison to what you really think is the vision. What is the purpose? What is driving the train? That is so important. And the clearer you can make that, the simpler it is. And in our case, it kind of rises and falls with the people that are there. Some are more interested in one end of it, some are more interested in the other end of it, unfortunately. And I think this whole thing should be about a word that we were using in our workshop yesterday, balance. I think we're always searching for balance. In our case at Mountain View, you have to take care of the staff. If you don't take care of them, they won't take care of the residents. And so it's kind of a loop that takes place. Do you have any more thoughts on that, Dan? So I think, though, that even though for each of us it might be a little bit of a different answer because of what you're doing, I think it's important that we're thoughtful about this question, because most of us are either some kind of church or parachurch organizations, right? We're somehow affiliated with the group of believers. Some are more directly a church group, some more of a constituency, some maybe more of a Christian community type of thing, as in schools perhaps. But whatever the case, we answer to the body of believers in our area. So I think that we need to have a willingness to engage the church in meaningful discussions about these questions. And we could have another whole discussion here about ownership and what that looks like. And should we take ownership of our little ministries and our terrain, and what would that look like? And is ownership a good thing or a bad thing? I've heard it referred to in both ways. I guess the simple answer is it depends. There could probably be an unhealthy ownership, and there certainly is a healthy ownership. I think for any ministry to thrive, there needs to be some kind of ownership, in my opinion. Somebody has to take accountability and responsibility for what's happening. Now, I think there's such a thing as maybe being too possessive of it, to where we're no longer able to step back and let other people speak into the organization. So I think we need to be have a willingness to engage in these things, and have a willingness to course correct if we need to. And I think we need to be okay with the idea that all of this may require a lot of precious ministry time and energy. Have you ever resented the amount of energy this process takes? Makes you tired thinking of it sometimes, doesn't it? Just keeping everybody on the train, on track, on board. I'm here to say I think it's worth our time. I think it's worth our time. We need to invest time in trying to keep in sync with what's happening. Well, so we've been talking about an awareness of the churches and where they are, and I'd like to think then a bit about an awareness of what it takes to keep the ministry itself on the cutting edge. And again, our 40 minutes this afternoon is not even close to being enough to do much with this, but just at least to stimulate our thinking a little bit. What does it take to keep your ministry on the cutting edge of things? I'm saying to you, I think it's worth your time to think deeply about this and whatever it is that you're working on here. So many different things represented right here in this group. Think deeply about what it takes to keep it on the cutting edge. And here is just a few quick, short comments. Again, I think you need to have a very clear vision of what success would look like. If you would actually be coming out on top with your ministry, what would it look like? People being helped to victory. Young people finding the way through education. What would it look like if you had success in your ministry? And to keep that focus, I think there needs to be a sustainable culture within the organization. I realize that's kind of a weird term. I've been thinking a lot about the... Would you agree with me today that within every organization there is a certain culture? There is, isn't it? It's a certain culture within the organization. How the people in that organization think. We heard a message the other day about attitude here, right? How people think inside of the organization. Are they thinking destructive ways? Are they thinking helpful, encouraging, building up ways? Is it always about we can't do that? Is it always about yes, we can? And you know, it seems like within every organization you have some pulling both ways, don't you? Some are heading one way, some are heading another. And I think it's so important that we think about culture. And I can give you just an example of my own experience, I guess, at Mountain View. In the period of time that I've been there, sometimes I would like to say, I think I must have seen everything by now. And by the time you think you've seen everything, you see something else. Some other kind shows up at your place of ministry, and you're thinking, oh my, now what are we going to do? But I think all of that is part of the culture. And the nature of our ministries many times is such that there is some coming and going, right? Not 100% of your staff are going to be there for 20 years, okay? There's some coming and some going, and I think the culture within that is and I can give you an example. We've had someone on our team that always had this this philosophy about money. Now, do any of you have to deal with money in your ministries? This one particular philosophy that was really strong in our ministry was that basically it was this idea. It was like a dollar not spent is a dollar closer to heaven. Have you ever had that kind in your organization? No? No, you guys like to spend money, right? Okay. But seriously, it was kind of like the attitude, a dollar not spent is somehow a dollar closer to heaven. Whoa. So what if something is needed in the place? Well, if you can live without it, that's the way to go. Well, God teaches us, Jesus taught a lot about the idea of being stewards, right? Being stewards of what God has given to us. So how we interpret what that means can make such a difference. And maybe the other end of that philosophy might be something about the goose again. Find out what the goose is and what is it that's laying those golden eggs and take very good care of it. Or maybe it's the attitude of Jesus when the lady broke the alabaster box on his feet because she loved him. And the disciples were like, why are you letting him do this for? Jesus, don't you know what's going on here? They're spending money. We could do something else with that money. But Jesus said, no, they're doing it to me. It's okay. The people you serve, do they deserve the best? Can you give them too much assistance in the way of helping them to reach the goals that you and God has for them? These are just questions. About the nature of culture within a building. And I can tell you that I've had a lot of fun at Mount View. So we're a nursing home. You put those two words together, it's probably the ugliest words that you can find. Do you ever want to go to a nursing home? No. You ever want to take your, you just want to stay away from nursing homes as far as you can, right? Well, I have had so much fun over the past number of years. I've had so much fun trying to make a difference in this matter. And I've tried to take lessons everywhere I could find them. And one day, I got a lesson at a strange place. In order to maintain my license, I have to go to do continuing ed at different places. And one day, we landed up at a Ritz-Carlton in Northern Virginia. We drove into the Ritz-Carlton, and before I did or said anything, hardly, got out of the car and walked around the back, and the bellhop hadn't said anything to him. The bellhop started to try to say my name. I say try because my name's this long. He was trying to say my name. I was like, nah, hang up here. Hang on. I just drove up here. Never been here before. Didn't say anything to him. He's saying my name. There's something weird about this. And knowing me, I'm too inquisitive. I said, hey, guy, you need to tell me. How is it that you're saying my name? He looked a little sheepish, and he says, I looked on your luggage tag. Ritz-Carlton. They're known for this kind of thing. They're known for this kind of thing. Later in that conference, they were talking about these little credo cards they keep in their pockets. And I thought to myself, the little credo cards that say, we are ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. I thought to myself, I wish I had one of those cards. I just nabbed the closest guy I could find of their employees and I said, hey guy, where could I find those cards? And he started to say to me, he said, maybe you could go to the front desk over there. And he hardly had the words out of his mouth until he, caught himself, jerked it out of his pocket, says, here, you got one. I said, okay guy, you passed the test. I just have found it so rewarding and so much fun to apply those sorts of things to a nursing home. To give them the best. To roll out the red carpet. To give them more than they expected in the name of Jesus. It is so much fun to do that. And I think our own attitudes about these things make such a huge difference within our organization. We need to hurry up here. Okay. So we need a sustainable culture. We need a cohesive leadership team. All these things need an hour of discussion, okay? I'm sorry. We just have to go through this, and you can think about them a bit and contemplate what it means in your organization. But we need cohesive leadership teams. Have you ever experienced a leadership team that wasn't a cohesive team? Yeah? Probably most of us have. And we've understood the distraction of it, have we not? The pressure from within. A cohesive leadership team is so important. Patrick Lencioni, when he talks about operating both smart and healthy. Now, we're very good at operating smart. We can do it. We can get the numbers down. You know, we know how to run a place. But are we operating healthy? Are we operating in ways that are truly healthy for the organization? To where there's, you know, health is something interesting. You get up in the morning and you have a headache. Somebody just looking at you may or may not know that you have a headache. But inside of you, you know this isn't good. And I think an organization is like that a lot of times. Maybe someone from the distance could look at your organization, you look pretty good. But inside, you can tell it's a bellyache going on. Something ain't right. I think to pay attention to operating both smart and healthy, and I brought a few books along. I'm a great book nut, I guess I would say. As they say, what are you going to learn outside of books? I love books, and there's so many things that you can learn from them. And I encourage you, I've got a little book list in the back end of your handout. I encourage you to look at those and maybe get some of them if you like. Operating smart and operating healthy. Well, there's so many other things that we really must have. Trust. I just picked up a little book here the other day. Stephen Covey's son, Stephen M. R. Covey, The Speed of Trust. If you want to have a stimulating read on trust, how many of you agree that without trust, you've got nothing? If trust is gone, it's over. You must guard it. If you want a healthy organization, small word, got to have common sense. Is there any common sense in your organizations? Yeah. If it's missing, it's miserable, I can tell you. Every once in a while, I've gotten a little bit too close to a place where there wasn't much common sense. There must be common sense. And it's so common sense that it's astounding. Just the idea of common sense, embracing complexity. How many of us would agree that it's more complex than meets the eye? It's a lot more complex than meets the eye many times. But to be able to embrace that complexity, to be able to open your arms to it, to be willing to wrap your arms around it, to ask God for wisdom to understand the complexity of it, to embrace conflict. Is conflict a bad thing or a good thing?
Opportunity.
That's a positive thinker.
Depends on what you do with it.
Thank you. Amen. Depends on what you do with it. And it's all about relationship, is it not? The other day, our unit teams were sitting together, and one of the seasoned men spoke up, and he said, you know what? He says, we Anabaptist people are very good with work. We know how to work. We're efficient. We can get it down. We know how to get her done. We know how to work. But he said the thing that we don't know how to do relationship. Now that was kind of a blow. But I think if we'd be a bit thoughtful, we'd understand it is true that in so many times When it comes to relationship, that's where the rubber hits the road, and that's where the difficulty comes. It's all about relationship. We teach a conflict management class in Mountain View Nursing Home. I was privileged to write the class myself, because the state of Virginia says that the reason that CNAs leave the place of employment as healthcare workers is not because they don't like the work, because they can't do their supervisor, or they can't do their fellow employees. If we take it a little further, we understand that's the reason churches separate, right? It's about relationship. We know how to work, but do we know how to do relationship? And all of our ministries, it's what it's about. It's about relationship. I think we do well to think about that. Communication in every direction. We talk so much about communication, but we need to hurry along here. What factors may be present in the supporting constituencies that make it possible to keep personnel in it for the long haul? What factors might be present? And here's just a simple question. Ministries don't fail, people fail. That's kind of a harsh statement. Kind of a harsh statement, I think. But do you have any comments on it? Sometimes we talk about our ministries rising and falling. But within those ministries are people, are living people, are they not? And many, many times, what's going on inside of that situation is the people within it. So I think that the thing that we need so much is to think about what it really, really takes to survive, just survive, or thrive. And just a couple more comments that are in your notes as we try to wrap this up here. I think we need engaged and qualified boards. And there's a few suggestions in your notes about that, what that would look like. I'm afraid sometimes to maintain a viable ministry, we really need boards that are on track and on target. I'm afraid too many times we have a bit of a haphazard way of appointing our boards. We look at a brother who's in good standing with the church, and he's on his 2 feet and he breathes, and we ask him, would you serve on the board? And he says, yes, got him. And he's on the board. Without much regard to whether does he know anything about your ministry, does he care about your ministry, does he have time to invest in the ministry? I think it's important that we think deeply about who we get involved, because who you get involved is going to make a difference of whether your ministry is rising or if it's falling. And I remember the Mountain View at one time was kind of stuck in a rut. We couldn't figure out, we knew we needed some rebuild stuff, but we couldn't get started to save our life. All of a sudden we got a board member who was a shaker and a mover. And he gets on board and he says, what are we sitting here for? Let's go. And we went. $5 million later, okay? So it's like, all right. It's just a matter of somebody getting on track and say, let's go with this. As opposed to, passivity. That just, let's just kind of glide along the best we can. Makes a huge difference. A huge difference. Who are those people that are on your board? And I would also just say that I think it makes a huge difference as to the engaged and qualified personnel that we might have on our boards as well. Now, I'm just trying to think here quickly how we can best wrap this up. You can read the notes and we can talk about it more later. And I think that the bottom line is that Jesus would like to see his people thrive and not just survive. And I hope that you can take heart in your ministry, in whatever stage of ministry you're in, that you can know that it's God's will for your ministry to not just survive from day to day, from moment to moment, but to really thrive. Jesus says, I am come that you might have life more abundant. Jesus said, I would be delighted if there was rivers of water flowing from our innermost being. And Jesus said, "Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit." In our modest Anabaptist ways, we're probably a little embarrassed to carry around buckets with the grapes flowing over the top, aren't we?
Are we?
Should we be? Jesus said the Father is honored. The Father is honored if you bear much fruit. And I just hope today that as we contemplate what God is up to in our little place of ministry, that you could get a picture of the idea that God the Father is honored if there's fruit for Him in your service. And He wants to enable us. He wants to empower us. And sometimes amidst all the fracas of being shoved this way against the wall and that way, we lose sight of that picture. But I hope you can maintain that perspective. The verse in your notes says, "The fear of man brings a snare, but the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding." How many times we walk in the fear of man? The only thing that's going to matter at the end of your service, in your ministry, in life, on the earth, wherever it is, the only thing that's going to matter is when you stop and you look up to heaven and you say, "Jesus, did I do okay today?" The answer to that question is all that's going to matter. And if somehow we can maintain focus, and I just like this old business classic right here, Good to Great. Have some of you read this book? Jim Collins. He gives two words for businesses in America that are thriving. The best businesses. The businesses that are out over the top. And I think we do well as Christian ministries to study common sense. Study common sense when it comes to organizational skills and abilities and relationships and communications. Jim Collins found two surprising factors behind every truly great organization in America. And I'd like to suggest to you that I think there are two factors that would be found behind the truly great organizations in our parachurch ministries. And he says that the level 5 leader that you find behind the great organizations in America is not a leader that's the kind that's out front waving his arms and ordering everybody around and whipping everybody in line. Rather, he says there's a leader behind those organizations with two things. Number one, they are leaders that have an uncommon focus. They have an uncommon focus on what it is that God is up to in this organization. And they have an uncanny ability to stick with it, to not get sidetracked, to stick with the real thing, to maintain that focus and to keep the organization on focus, no matter how many things want to drag it this way, want to drag it that way. No matter how much political wind there is going in all directions, but to maintain that uncommon focus. And the second thing that Collins says is behind these organizational leaders is an uncommon humility. And I would just like to suggest today that with those two things behind your ministry, driving your ministry, I believe it will be truly amazing where God would like to take the work of your hands, as empowered by the Spirit, as blessed by His hand upon your hand. An uncommon focus, an uncommon humility. Lord, today we're so grateful. Though so unworthy, Lord, to be a part of these various ministries. Oh God, we just know, though today, that we need you. We need the focus that only comes from you. We need the purpose, the vision. And oh God, how much we need the humility of heart to let you be God. Let you be the one who is working in our hearts and in our lives. Oh God, I pray that every ministry represented here today will be that kind of ministry. That when anybody around sees these men coming, God, they'd see you coming. They'd know that it's saturated by Jesus Christ. Amen. Thank you all. Thank you for being here today.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.